Welcome to Wine and Film, A Perfect Pairing. I'm film critic Gary Cogill, and this week we take a closer look at a new sci-fi thriller. It's called Life, starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds. Oh, and one of my favorite filmmakers on the planet, Texan Robert Benton, was just in Dallas. A look back on the life and times of the writer-director who brought us Bonnie and Clyde, Places in the Heart, and Kramer vs. Kramer.
Now I'm wine expert Haley Hamilton Cogill. Life on a New Planet deserves wine from a new place, and we've talked about some emerging wine regions a bit lately. So today we'll take on wines from Patagonia, and we'll raise a glass to Robert Benton with wines from great Texans Craig and Catherine Hall and their Hall wines. But first, Gary, let's talk about Life. We just walked out of Life.
Not a bad metaphor. Not an awful film.
No, we actually sat through the whole film.
We sat through the whole thing and then we walked out of the theater. To come and record this. I'm going to say this. I think Life is a one-hour film, and it's a pretty good one-hour film. It's just under 2 hours, and then it starts narrating itself, and then it starts explaining everything it's doing.
Yeah.
It assumes the entire audience is an idiot, and it's a creature feature.
Is it like the Blob? Did the Blob almost?
It's not unlike the Blob through
the projector.
It's like a creature feature, and it's like a ghost movie, and they all have the same premise. But in a ghost movie. It's kind of like Westerns became sci-fi films.
Right.
Westerns round up the spaceship, the aliens are coming.
Uh-huh.
Well, in these movies, the spaceship is a ghost, is a haunted house, and there's a creature in it, or there's a ghost, and it starts killing off everybody one by one, and you in a different room every time, mm-hmm. almost like the game Clue, and they're all very similar
I'm in the Life Pod.
Yes, they're concept driven films
with a wrench,
and then. Also, what we know about Alien, the great Alien movie that Ridley Scott did, and then Aliens, the sequel, actually, that James Cameron did. It's just great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I can put it in the same breath, but barely. It's not really that, but it's derivative of that because it's a creature on a spaceship, and they all start getting bumped off. And these are famous actors. It's Ryan Reynolds, and it's
Idris Elba,
and it's Jake Gyllenhaal, and the girl in it, Rebecca Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
Who's actually very good in the film. Actually, there's two women, and they're both very good in the film. Everybody's fine in the film.
She played the girlfriend of Hugh Grant and Florence Foster Jenkins.
That's her.
Yeah. I like her. I'm interested to see what her career is going to do, because I think she's a British actress that I think is kind of interesting.
And it's a big movie. I mean, it opened in the second week of Beauty and the Beast, so it's probably up to around $30 million now. And worldwide, it's going to make a whole bunch of money in Europe. And actually, for an hour, you kind of cover your eyes a little bit and watch it, because you know something's
going to happen. And I think that there was a kind of wonderful sense of discovery in mm-hmm. the first part of the film and
it's a little derivative of The Martian,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
they're on their way back from Mars. They're all intact.
They've sent a pod out to that gathered samples now come back to the space station.
And the space station is their laboratory, because you don't want to take anything down to Earth if it's toxic or anything. And this is a creature feature. So can I just say what the creature looks like? Because it's been out a week.
Yeah.
But it looks like a giant manta ray with a lot of gack on it,
uh-huh.
and about eight more kind of arms.
Lots of
things.
Arms.
It doesn't really resemble...
And a big snake head.
Yeah.
It's got a big cobra head.
It does have a cobra head.
But then opens it. That's also kind of like a flower. It keeps opening up and revealing more phases of scariness.
What's the name of the artist from New Mexico?
Yes, Barry George O'Keefe.
Sort of. So it's slightly alien driven. It's a little Georgia O'Keeffe. It looks like a manta ray with maybe a possible snake's head.
Yeah. And then they give it a name.
I'm going to say also, without giving anything away, the ending to the movie is really bad.
It's really stupid.
And so I rolled my eyes. And there are two possible endings to this movie.
Uh-huh.
One slightly better than the other. Both are bad. But they chose the wrong one, and they chose the bad one.
Well, I thought it was obvious.
You started laughing.
I thought it was completely obvious. Because I looked at you, and I said what I thought was going to happen.
Right.
And you're like, no, that's not going to happen.
This movie isn't smart. at all. But there's no smart ending to this.
Well, and you know. And there were lots of things that I found a little problematic.
Well, in science or what?
Well, it has been out already. So again,
you can say a little bit about.
Well, I mean, it's one creature. It's one alien.
Right.
But how the alien is formed is by a whole bunch of different cells coming together. But they make it kind of a point to say that each cell is its own independent life form.
So why aren't there thousands of these things?
Exactly. Why is there only one guy that's like ruining everything? Why didn't they all start splitting off and figuring out a way to...
Well, that's a bigger budget movie. You have to create each
one. Well... And then there is...
It's a ghost story.
There's a white mouse... in the film that just sat in the laboratory in a harness the whole time. Like, he never got to go out and have, like, you know, photo hour with the rest of the
astronauts. No, there's no mice time. There's absolutely no rat or mice time.
And I just didn't like seeing the mouse. It never got out of its little harness.
Well, it serves a purpose in the movie, and then it serves an alien purpose in the movie. Gulp, gulp. You know. But if I was grading this movie, and I would rather use words than grades, it's probably a C+ at best. Yeah, am I being generous?
I think so.
Because I don't think it's an awful film.
No, and the first part of the film, I do think there was a nice kind of wonderment in the discovery of what could be, and then it all went downhill.
Yeah, because you know what it is, because the trailers kind of give all of it away. Yeah. You know. So anyway, Life, better films to come, and reflective of movies that I think come out this time of year with big stars. Mm-hmm. So some of them are much worse than others. We're really getting ready to start April now, so they're going to slightly probably get a little bit better, but not that much. It's kind of... Life better than most films this time of year.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's so. Let's talk about wine that is better. How's that?
Well, how are you going to pair with an alien space movie? Because it's they're finding new life in new areas.
It's a new frontier. Yes,
Mars is a new frontier. God, do you think they'll ever grow wine on the moon?
I don't think the atmosphere would actually allow for it.
No, it doesn't.
But that's a very interesting...
It does have a big cool down.
It's a very interesting to walk question, though. It's very hot at one point and very cold at another, which is actually quite a bit like Patagonia. Thank you for my...
Patagonia.
Thank you for my lead-in. So,
where's Patagonia?
Southernmost region in Argentina.
Right.
And so, Argentine wines are certainly not...
It's way down there.
But it is. It's very, very far south. And really, up until a handful of years ago, it was mostly desert land until they started kind of developing it and planting vineyards. And like I said, you know, wines from Argentina have certainly been around for a while. We know about the great Malbecs of Mendoza, the Salta region also, high elevation, really great Torontas, I think, actually comes from Salta. But this part of Argentina, in the southern part, what makes their wines so interesting, and I think why they're kind of really emerging on the wine scenes with their Malbec, with their Cab Franc, even a little bit of Pinot Noir, is that you have very, very hot days, and then you also have very cool nights. And so it's one of the longest growing seasons, which actually allows for a really, really slow ripening of the fruit, which you want. Then it's just not all in your face, big, intense, you know, big, juicy red fruit. It's actually a really kind of restrained wines with a kind of normal, you know, 13 to 15% alcohol levels, which is what we tend to see from you know, kind
of
those Malbecs
and
Cabernets, especially kind of New World wines. But there's also a really nice freshness to it, and that's really what you want to look for. That's what makes them food friendly. That's what makes them approachable. And there's also a kind of minerality from these very nutrient rich soils. And again, you have these cool breezes that come off the Andes that keep the freshness with this really interesting layer of minerality that just seems to be making really interesting wines, and something that I think we'll continue to see a lot of. And it has gotten, you know, there are a handful of different producers that are making kind of a name for themselves. One of the biggest is Bodega Delfin del Mundo. that
say
is...
Say that one more time. Bodega del Fin del Mundo.
And Michelle Roland is behind it. And Michelle Roland is a very, very well-regarded, highly, very famous enologist from France that kind of makes the big, intense... California cabs makes big. It's he makes Robert Parker wines. He makes high rated, very big fruit, lots of big bold characteristics kind of wine that again from this area though seem to be kind of taking all of that power and all that strength, but also adding in a nice layer of freshness. Another one is called Malma. It's and again, they're kind of signature varieties: Malbec, Cab Sav, Cab Sauvignon, Cab Franc. It's interesting. I'm excited to kind of continue to see how these wines do over the next few years.
So it's Patagonia. Am I thinking Gauchos?
You have your gauchos, which are the cowboys of Argentina,
right.
All throughout the country. It's great fishing. It's a really great fishing.
Huge fly fishing area. Big fish.
And it's just from my experience I had with Francis Malman a couple of months ago that we talked about on the show with Bodega Garzon. Though he has his place in Uruguay and he has several restaurants in throughout Argentina. Patagonia is his home, and it's kind of where he said his heart will always be in Patagonia, which I just always love that. And I think it's because it is such for someone who likes the kind of rustic side and the wild side and the very kind of traditional side of South America, it kind of inhabits all of that. And it is some of the best fishing, I think, that you can ever find in the world.
Well, congratulations, because you've taken an utterly average to below average movie-going experience and then elevated it, which you can do with wine, which I think is fantastic. When we come back on Wine and Film, A Perfect Pairing, we're going to chat about a very special evening we both got to be a part of earlier this week. It's with the Dallas Film Society, celebrating the great Texan, the filmmaker, one of my favorites on the planet, Robert Benton. And we will be right back. And welcome back to Wine and Film, A Perfect Pairing. Can we talk about the great Robert Benton?
Absolutely.
I'm chomping to do this. Is chomping the right word? So you've heard me talk about Robert Benton a lot. And earlier this week, we got to spend an evening with him and his wife, Sally.
It was a really special night.
I think his son was there.
Yeah.
It's an honor. It's called Art of Film, and it honors a filmmaker or an actor. Or somebody in the film business every year. And last year it was Isabella Rossellini. And this year it's the great Robert Benton, who I found out, I thought was born and raised in Waxahachie, but was not. He grew up in Oak Cliff.
Yeah.
Just probably down the street from Stevie Ray Vaughan. Robertson is close to mid-80s now,
sure,
I think.
Sure.
And but back in the day, and then he moved to Waxahachie somewhere around 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so his memories of growing up are mostly there as a Texan. And, you know, his mother, Dorothy, and his father, Ellery, and his dad. I found out some things about him, Robert Benton, that I didn't know. But Robert Benton's dad attended both Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow's separate funerals.
That
and also, both of his uncles were killed, murdered.
Wow.
And so he had a connection with Bonnie and Clyde in an early day.
Early on, yeah, sure.
Yeah, the murders of his both uncles were not connected to Bonnie and Clyde. But he had a connection with Bonnie and Clyde, and then he ends up writing the screenplay. So, mm-hmm. and Warren Beatty produced that film, stars in it, and Faye Dunaway was there.
And
with
she
us.
Was lovely. And
lovely and sweet.
Yeah, very generous.
Because Faye Dunaway can be difficult, but was sweet and lovely and couldn't be nicer all night long. Took a lot of photos and chatted with everybody.
Yeah, and he really, there was definitely a love fest going on. He was I thought he was so generous. He's very generous in conversation, very generous in spirit, incredibly gracious, and really kind of wanted to deflect. He said a few times, "I'm talking too much." And it's kind of like, that's why you're here.
No,
we love you. But in his, you know, talking about Faye Dunaway and everything that she brought to that part, and how she brought the style and she brought the look, and the film wouldn't have been the same. I just found it to be very, very classy and very charming.
Because it's directed by Arthur Penn. So Robert Benton eventually went on to do some other great films we'll get to. But Bonnie and Clyde is an iconic film. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of French New Wave in there, because a lot of things that happened in Bonnie and Clyde were not really even allowed by censors. Back in 1967, you couldn't make some of these kinds of films. And the first time, I think somebody was shot in the face with a gun, that the violence was more than most films, that it acted like it was celebrating the violence because those characters did. Mm-hmm. You know, they're robbing banks and killing people, and they just wanted to be famous, as Robert Benton said.
For the fame. That's what's
for the
so,
fame.
Yeah.
They just wanted to be famous.
They didn't care about the money.
No.
They wanted to buy lots of things, and then they wanted
yeah.
fame.
Yeah. And they went out young, and they
I
went out early.
I know a lot of people.
And yet the film is just an iconic. It was nominated for 10 Oscars in 1967. So here's the list of other 1967 movies.
Yeah.
And when you think of the great years of movies, we always bring up 1939, Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz, blah, blah, blah. But listen to this year. The Graduate, In Cold Blood, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, Wait Until Dark, In the Heat of the Night, The Jungle Book, the original animated film, Cool Hand Luke, Thoroughly Modern Millie, Barefoot in the Park, Camelot.
Camelot.
How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah.
And I think, and The Graduate wins Best Picture that year, but, and Robert Benton was nominated for writing Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I think it won two. Won a supporting actress, and then another one, I can't remember which one, maybe film editing. But Robert Douglas Benton went on to do Kramer versus Kramer. He wrote Superman for Richard Donner. He wrote that original Superman movie.
Wow.
And he wrote What's Up, Doc,
yeah.
the Peter Bogdanovich film,
yeah.
which is iconic for a lot of people. But Kramer versus Kramer was a huge deal, just a huge deal with Dustin Hoffman and
Meryl Streep.
And Meryl Streep and discovering the young boy in it. And as Benton said, they were all spent after making that movie. They were exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave it all. And of course, that film was actually won the Oscar, I think, in its year, in 1979, I think, 8 nominations. It won 5, including Best Picture. Benton wins Best Director. He wins Best Screenplay. Hoffman wins Best Actor.
Yeah,
and Meryl Streep wins Supporting
yeah,
Actress.
Yeah.
And that year, 1979, Apocalypse Now. Wow.
Yeah.
All That Jazz. Wow. Norma Rae.
Yeah.
Sally Field won
yeah.
her first Oscar.
Well, and because we talked a little bit about this, and
because
you had commented on how interesting that Meryl Streep was nominated as a supporting actress instead of as best actress, whereas Dustin Hoffman was nominated for best actor. And I think just from what Robert Benton had said was they knew that Sally Field she was a shoe-in, and so they wanted to celebrate. Yeah, the Academy wanted to celebrate.
They
Meryl
do. They
Streep
position those things.
Yeah.
Robert Benton also wrote an X-rated, a bit in an X-rated off-Broadway musical called O Calcutta. And as he said, he lived off it for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
He didn't make any money writing some things. But he, O Calcutta is full nudity, off-Broadway
oh my
musical.
Gosh.
Raunchy.
Yeah.
Fascinating. But and then he does Places in the Heart in 1984, which is 7 Oscar nominations. It won 2 and Sally Field wins mm-hmm. again. That's where she made that famous speech, "You like me." And you know, she never said, "You really like me." She just said, "You like me, you like me."
Mm-hmm.
And we all throw in "really," but she never actually said that. That's the year of Amadeus, Passage to India, Starman, The Natural, The Killing Fields, mm-hmm. Footloose, Purple Rain, Romancing the Stone. Benton's nominated for 6 Oscars, has won 3. I think he's one of the most amazing writers and directors we've ever had on the planet. And Places of the Heart was his kind of homage, just like all of his films, a lot about Texas and a lot about growing up in Waxahachie. Those places are really places in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever get a chance to watch this, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Places in the Heart, or you haven't seen it in a number of years, get it. We need to do that one night. Because the ending of that movie is one of the most meaningful endings ever. It's just stunningly beautiful and kind of takes your breath away.
Yeah.
And it reflects Robert Benton's look at humanity and how he's a human being who kind of looks at people and looks at the best in them. But he can also write about difficult subjects and difficult people. But he honors all of his characters. He kind of believes in his characters, whether they're good, morally good, or morally bad.
Mm-hmm.
He's so interesting to me. So I was like a kid in a candy store, Haley.
You were, and the
I was
the,
a little giddy.
Well,
and
your interview
goofy.
was wonderful, and it was just really, really impressive to see someone with so much to have all of the credits that he has, to be so gracious, and that's, you hope that, like, that's the person that you hope that all of us will be, you know, be when we're 84 years old.
And it's the opposite of a temperamental, famous Hollywood type. Yeah. You know, we hear this a lot in politics. You Hollywood elitist. If you ever say that about my friend Robert Benton, I'm going to hose you off. I'm going to get an ice-cold hose, and I'm going to hose you down.
Yeah.
Because it's just ridiculous. Yeah. It's amazing. So thank you. Thank you, Robert Benton, for the trip to Dallas and the chance to hang out and also screening Bonnie and Clyde for an audience and having Faye Dunaway speak a little bit. And this is really, really fun stuff. But we drank some good wine.
Well, and that's what was kind of fun
because
also.
It was a sit-down dinner event with wine pairings.
Exactly. And so just kind of taking off of the beautiful wines that were poured for Art of Film from their honorary chairs for this year, Craig and Catherine Hall. We've been fans of Hall wines for a number of years and have visited the winery. And kind of, I think that might have been on our first trip to Napa.
I think it was because they had such striking architecture.
Right. It's
or artwork.
All of their artwork. Well, and that
their
was
their installation artwork things.
That was kind of when the Hall started their winery in Napa, and she is California. Her family had vineyards in Mendocino. And then Craig Hall is here from here in Dallas. He's chairman and founder of the Hall Group, which is based in Dallas, which does a lot of real estate and kind of big entrepreneurial ventures and that sort of thing, structured financial lending, da 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 da. Lots of philanthropy as well. The both of them have done an incredible amount of philanthropy. But growing up in this vineyard, Catherine Hall always kind of knew that she wanted a winery that showcased both fine wine as well as art, and to have kind of as much of a gallery that you would think of, an art gallery, as well as a place to go and enjoy really great wines, and they've done that. She was also ambassador to Austria.
She was. She was an ambassador.
Exactly.
The United States. Yeah.
They're incredible couple, incredible, you know, have incredible backgrounds that they both bring together, but then have established this fantastic winery in Napa. From they have the St. Helena Bergfield, the former Bergfield winery that they bought in 2003, and then they also have their Rutherford winery that's the one that we went to.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's a lot of Rutherford fruit. I want to say they have over 500 acres of land in Napa growing classic Bordeaux varieties, Cabernet Merlot, Sauvignon Blanc. We had both of their just Napa Cab as well as their Sauvignon Blanc last night. And both of them were that Sauvignon Blanc was just so crisp and refreshing and lively, really beautiful. And then I found, and you kind of have that, and we've talked about it before, that classic kind of Rutherford dust, the earthiness.
It's on the back end.
That comes out. But there was also such a nice layer of dark chocolate and lots of lots of red fruit notes that made both of those wines incredibly special. And then one thing that I've also always loved about the work that they do is their focus, their commitment to sustainability. They have a Gold LEED certified winery. They're very aware of our environment and that we need to protect our environment, which I am very, very pleased with, especially on the heels of executive orders that continue to be signed.
Yes.
You know, we just have to, I think, supporting farms and wineries, and because it's all farming that keep the environment in mind and in check. It's so easy to do when the wines are so good.
Yeah.
So just really special and exciting to be able to try those wines. It was a
I think that one of my memories is one of their high end wines is the Catherine,
mm-hmm.
and that wine to me is Oh, wow.
Stellar.
Yeah, if you can get a hand, if you can get a hold on a bottle of that.
They have a Bergfield from St. Helena. I've always kind of, I love the earthy dustiness of Rutherford. I'm also, I think that there's kind of a femininity maybe to some of the different St. Helena vineyard wines that we've had, and that's one that, that I think is exceptional. Their Excelsior also really exceptional. But even just, you know, their Napa Merlot. It's kind of the one of those Merlots when people won't tell me that they don't drink Merlot. I'm like, yeah, drink this. Just give it a try.
Because they believe that nonsense from Sideways.
Yes.
Love Sideways, but that's nonsense.
It's nonsense.
It is.
It's nonsense. Some of the greatest wines in the world are predominantly Merlot. And, yes. and they're consistently wines that you can believe in. And it's also great that they are in Dallas a lot. They are in Texas a lot, as well as out in California a lot. And so
it's fun to see the halls. Craig and Kath, because I've never really talked with Craig, but I think I've been in the room with him once, but spoke with him this week quite a bit. And to see Catherine there, who we both know, and to watch you talk wine with her. And then across the table is Faye Dunaway.
Yeah.
And then to the left is Robert Benton. And it's a small room of about 250 people. So this was very special. You know, the Dallas Film Society that puts on the Dallas International Film Festival has been around for a number of years. And it's an important thing. It's an important part of, the branding and the structure of a city.
Absolutely.
To honor the arts, and in this way, over 10 days, to honor films.
Well, that's the
nice
thing.
And to let filmmakers come in and just show their stuff, and you can talk to them and meet them.
And have a conversation. Yeah, because we still have, what, 8 or 9 days still of the festival, because it just opened technically last night on Thursday. So there's some really interesting films. There's everything from shorts to full-length features to docs. It's a great mix of new films. Everything has to be new or made within the last year. Is that correct?
Right. They're all within the last year. And there's a Texas category of Texas made films. But I think the biggest thing that we see, that I come away from festivals are not big Hollywood premieres, but it's the small documentaries.
Yeah.
You know, last year we saw Tower.
Yeah.
Tower premiered at this festival and then I think should have been nominated for an Oscar this year. It was on the bubble. But boy, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you see here. And we have a
connection that we have a friend that did her film, The Big Spoon. I think it's Saturday.
Mallory.
Yeah, Mallory. Yeah. Zachary Knighton's in that film.
Yeah.
I think Saturday night it screens at like 10 o'clock, something like that. So, yeah, and it's nice to also see films that you've known. There are a lot of Texas films and that we've kind of watched that finally can kind of have a stage to shine.
And we're going to honor David Gordon Green, who did Pineapple Express. That's a weed movie.
Yeah.
It's a weed road trip movie. And
it's
we're going to honor our friend, the great Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
So they're going to screen one of his films and honor him. And I think that's great. So kudos to you for Hall Wines. Kudos to them for making the wine.
Kudos for them for bringing us some.
And
really
my
good
idea
juice.
Of a perfect evening is one night, maybe we're in New York and we call up Robert Benton and his wife,
Sweet Sally.
Yes. And we have a glass of Hall wine.
I think that's a good time.
And hang out in Manhattan. Next week on Wine and Film, a perfect pairing, more new films, including the new Terrence Malick film set in Austin. It's called Song to Song. And get the cast: Rooney Mara, Ryan Gosling, Michael Fassbender, Natalie Portman. Wow.
I can't wait. I'm so excited for this film. But for more on today's show, please check out our blog on Cogill Consulting or through Facebook. Be sure to follow Gary on Twitter at Gary Cogill. And to see what we're drinking now, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Dallas Uncorked.
And with that, I'm Gary Cogill. And as usual, I'm looking for the next great film.
And I'm Haley Hamilton Cogill, always in search of a great glass of wine.
Join us next time on Wine and Film, a Perfect Pairing.